of having a joint.
Do we need to start over?
I got there.
We were approached by the town of Ledgeview and city of De Pere about the possibility of a regional residential yardway site.
Hello, Dave.
How's it going?
Good, how are you?
We're running a little late.
It's okay.
Here's a copy of the permits. Scott.
Want to give that to Jim? All right. So we were approached by the city of De Pere and the town of Ledgeview about the possibility of a regional residential yard waste site at our LeBron yard waste facility. After preliminary discussions with Scott, it was estimated that we would need about 4 acres to, one, accommodate a drop-off site, and then another 2 acres in the back, and I have shown on this map here, for storage. I have kind of outlined the area on this map where we would propose possibly this regional facility. Be 2 acres in the front for residents from all of the communities to drop off brush, leaves, grass, yard waste in this area here. When that got to a certain amount, then it would get moved back in an area here for storage temporarily until, one, we could haul it out, or two, if it's brush, grind that material. We had talked a little bit more about what is the next step. And we talked about this in December. I guess what we had discussed, there are many steps that we'd have to take to determine if this is possible. But the next step would be a feasibility study to look at, one, to review the existing environmental conditions out there, the floodplain, if there's a floodplain that would extend onto this property, too. Wetland areas. We do have on here the map, our map wetland areas. However, we need to go out and verify that those lines shown on this map represent the actual condition. We would hire a soil scientist to go out there and actually verify the location of the wetlands.
Hasn't the DNR already done that? Or how did they delineate them?
They have, it's called the Wisconsin Wetland Index. And it's not exact. They show a rough location of wetlands throughout Wisconsin. To verify the location, you have to hire a soil scientist to go out and actually physically mark the wetland boundary. From there, then that gets sent to the DNR and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and they concur. They'll go out, they'll send somebody out and concur whether or not that what they actually flagged actually represents the boundary of the wetland. Some consultants have staff that have been, they've been qualified to just go out and mark it, and they don't need concurrence from the state. However, they still would need concurrence from the Army Corps of Engineers. The third step to this, the feasibility study, would to look at the available space out there to see if it can be expanded. Can we enlarge our residential drop-off site and still continue to provide for our own internal needs, our own operational needs for parks and public works? If we're going to lose 4 acres over here, is there space, is there developable area outside of this that we can develop to mitigate, losing the space over here for a drop for yard waste? We do have a fairly large site. It's roughly speaking 19 acres. We have wetland areas on both sides of the site, on the west and east side. But I've kind of highlighted areas where we could expand our own yard waste area into. I've highlighted those areas here and over here. I've also tried to show on this map where we would probably have to construct some kind of stormwater BMP to not only store but treat stormwater off of this site. So I had reached out to Robert E. Lee about to use them as a consultant for this first step in the process, which we're calling the feasibility study. They have this afternoon sent me a proposal. The cost to do the work is estimated at $8,700. Scott, you have indicated that you'd be willing to possibly pay for this study.
Yes.
Scott has also indicated that there's a willingness to pay for the upfront cost of these improvements, which would include grading in other areas to develop other usable space for the village. Those development costs could possibly include fencing, lighting, security cameras, a paved drop-off site. The stormwater BMPs that would be required for this larger site. All of that we'd have to work through at a later date. We want to take this first step to look at can we accommodate a larger regional yard waste site and still at the same time maintain space for our internal use.
Any idea of volume? I mean, that's really just a guesstimate at this point, how many people would... Because DePere has the one drop-off site now?
Yes, we got, we actually got a site off Rockland Road. We actually operate it. Actually, we have an intergovernmental agreement with Leju. It's kind of something similar. I told Sean if this works out, we enter into an agreement where once it's operational, it's based off population as far as operational costs. Right now, like, for example, on Ledgeview and DePere, we're roughly 75%. We pay for the cost, 25% Ledgeview. I did some quick numbers, Sean. I didn't share it with you, but I took your population from 2017. Once it was built, then we talked about operational costs. If we went into a similar intergovernmental agreement, you know, DePere's portion would be roughly 53%. Ledgeview's would be 17%. And Alloy's would be 30%, the operational cost of that. So we'd be looking at, you know, potentially either Alloway or maybe DePere or something in an agreement, because Ledgeview doesn't have any equipment or staff. You know, between Alloway and DePere, we both have staff and equipment. Those would be things that we work out on. Volume-wise, that's one of the things that this feasibility study will determine. If I could just back up a little bit of history, I started talking to Alloway probably in 2015-16, because what we did is there a group of public works directors meet in Brown County on a regular basis. We had reached out to Brown County Port and Solid Waste about 2015 because they were building that new landfill. So we thought, you know, the yard waste is, you know, something like a solid waste. Is it potential to have them incorporate that into their new site? So long story short, we did a feasibility. We had a study. It was funded by UWGB Research Assistant. They felt that wouldn't work, but they looked at all the communities that wanted to participate and collaborate. You know, Alloway at the time was interested, you know, Ledgeview, DePere, other communities, and it made sense to have satellite, you know, drop-off spots. And then, you know, regionally-wise for treatment, City of Green Bay is working on, you know, expanding their site to potentially one day take all compost. So, for example, if this satellite site works for three communities, we would take our leaves and our, you know, stuff that our residents bring to us and bring it over to Green Bay, you know, and it potentially bring back product, that sort of thing. So it's kind of, you know, in works. I know I talked to Green Bay a couple of weeks ago. They'll start working on it. We have, the City of DePere has a push to get off our site because we have an agreement with the YMCA since 2010 that they're going to acquire our existing site on Rockland Road. And we believe we need to move forward in case, you know, they need to exercise their option with the city. Right now, we don't know when that'll be, but we figure we need to keep moving forward, you know, finding a satellite site. And if this works out, that's why I've been working with Sean over the last few months. Like he indicated, I think this is a great opportunity for the communities to collaborate. Definitely, there's a lot of things that will have to be worked out if it moves forward. But like Sean said, this is the first step. I do have to take it to my Board of Public Works and Council, but talking to my city administrator and mayor, we know we have the upfront costs, so those are things we'll have to work out. And then, you know, if your board agrees to the feasibility, it would be through, you know, have to come up with an intergovernmental agreement. We would pay you for the cost of REL to do that study and determine, will this work for all three communities?
Good, thanks. So you would eventually close the Rockland site?
Yes, okay. Yes.
The answer won't mean anything to me, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How much waste do you get at the current?
So, actually, you know, Sean was asking me, and I was digging up information I provided the county. So, between Ledgewood and De Pere, typically we haul approximately 6,000 cubic yards of grass out of there. The leaves, it's tough to determine because we're similar to Alloy. You know, my superintendent, your superintendent, are always looking as you collect leaves, we direct haul to your farmers and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we don't really necessarily bring those there, but there are leaves that your residents bring there. Mm-hmm. So there's approximately, you know, 11,000 cubic yards of leaves. And then a brush hauled in is roughly 2,000 cubic yards. And what we do is similar, I believe, what Alloy does. You know, people bring in their brush, haul it in there, and we bring a vendor in a couple times a year to grind. You know, I would imagine, you know, as part of this feasibility, we'd be looking at doing the same thing, but expanding the site so all three communities, as the brush pile gets large enough, then we, you know, bring a tub grinder and we grind it. And again, those are all part of the operational costs we would all share. Mm-hmm.
So the initial study showed LA was 33%, 31%?
Yeah, I mean, I did it. So when I did the population based off your 2017, Alloy has approximately 30% based off the population on your 2017. And that number I had was 13,886. I don't know.
It's about the same.
Yeah, about the same.
And it appears at what? 24?
So our population is 24,742, and Ledgewood's 8,134. And what I got is a spreadsheet. I shared it with Sean. So annually I get a bill with Ledgewood, and it's strictly based off population. So I take our total costs, you know, that we have to run the site, haul the stuff off, bring in the tub grinders, that sort of thing, and everything is shared strictly based off population base. So I just threw a number in there real quick on your population to give you folks an idea if it moves forward, kind of how we would share the costs going forward. That's one of the ideas Sean and I have been discussing.
Just something to think about. We've got the jail population at over 1,000 that does not contribute.
I don't think that's in our population anymore.
That's not?
I don't believe so.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Pretty sure it was around 2010 that was pulled out.
Good.
So if this committee were to move ahead with this study and the village board would say, yes, let's go ahead with it, this would be step one of many steps in the process. If we were to start the feasibility study, get into it, and find out, well, the wetland areas map currently shown on this map extend into our site, and it really restricts developable space. We may not have the room, or we may find out, oh yeah, we can accommodate the additional yard waste and at the same time maintain our own operations. Then the next step would be then to develop preliminary plans and better refine a concept and come up with a better cost estimate to determine what those upfront costs would be. Yeah. Scott has indicated that they may be willing to pay for all of the upfront costs, which would include a paved drop-off area. Included in that would be, I believe, your willingness to pay for all the engineering costs.
Yep.
If we can move forward.
If I may, is this, there's a lot of steps, like Sean said. I mean, where the city's coming from, is something, you know, I'll call timely is of the essence, because we would hope that this works out with the feasibility and we keep discussions going and come up with the boards and councils and government agreement where now let's hire, say, REL to do the design and bid it. The intent is we would pay for those costs. And then in addition, the cost, the actual, you know, the expansion of the site. There will be some things that we may have to talk about, like security cameras and lighting. And you know, do we want that? I mean, the basic stuff, you know, we agreed. Sean indicated, well, we need the expansion. I said, well, I'm not paying for that shed to be moved, you know, stuff like that. But anyway, there's a lot of different moving parts. And really the intent is if your board is okay with it moving forward, then I had to take it to our board because, you know, I got to make sure they're comfortable. We've been talking, you know, for many years on this, but now it's like, you know, it's right there. It's time to move. And if it doesn't work out, then I got to start looking at other options for the pier for another remote site. So,
is your site open 24 hours?
Yes. Okay. We do not staff it, and we don't lock the gates.
So behaviorally, all the residents would be in the same.
Yeah.
Kind of used to it.
So Scott, you had when we had talked, and I don't want to get into the details of the cost, but just so everybody knows what we've kind of discussed, because it really isn't up to us. It's going to be up to the village board and yeah. City council to come up with a fair agreement. But DePere, and I don't want to say Ledgeview because I haven't talked to Ledgeview, but that DePere would pay for the upfront costs, which would include the engineering and the construction. The operational costs would be shared based on population, and then there could be possibly a payment for, let's call it, a lease payment for the use of the land. Just going to put that out there. That I know, Ted, you had asked about that. I know you're somewhat hesitant.
I'm struggling with this, guys. I'm sorry. Okay. Respectfully.
Yep.
I'm struggling with it. I don't see it. I don't understand. And again, being blunt, we're talking about conservatively tripling the volume that's going to that site, tripling the traffic, tripling the headaches. And I appreciate the offer for the upfront cost, but obviously there's going to be significant maintenance if you've got triple the traffic. I still don't understand why Elway would agree to this. I don't understand why, if the shoe was on the other foot and Elway was coming to the pier saying, hey, we want all of our residents to start bringing their yard waste to your site, and we'll pay our fair share of residents, and that's it. Why would DePere say, oh yeah, sure, come on over and increase the traffic and the utilization?
Well, I think that, you know, I think maybe that's the reason why, and maybe there needs to be an additional payment for the use of the land, but it's all about trying to share one another's resources, and we want to collaborate, and we want to continue to do that in an attempt to reduce our operational cost. This is one way. And
then I think stressing that is going to be important.
And we want to take the first step in the process, and this is step number one, just to see, okay, let's look at the environmental conditions out there, and let's see if there's enough usable space.
In terms of our volume, do we know how many cubic yards of grass we do and all that?
We have all that, and that will get incorporated into this first step.
Okay.
We're gonna take that information, and we're gonna look at, okay, the 4 acres that we had thrown out there that we had estimated, 2 acres for drop off, 2 acres for storage. Is that going to be enough, or is that too much? You know, we're gonna temporarily store stuff out there, but we're gonna be hauling stuff away
too. Right.
And we're going to grind when we need to grind. And we're grinding now. So,
if I can interject, I think one of the important things is we do not want it to become a compost site.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to go down that road.
It's a staging
so
area.
So it's a staging area.
And it's just going to be for residential drop-off purposes only. You know, what the pier is collecting off of their curb isn't going to be hauled there. That's going to be hauled somewhere else. This is just for the residents to come, drop off, leave.
Okay. But the private residents on the site there, are they going to be a factor at all? Are they going to be concerned about the triple traffic and additional trucks and everything else, is that something that we're going to need to address as well?
Yeah, and they're, you know, maybe there's something we can do along their property. You know, there's a berm on the north side right now, but maybe we can build a little bit larger berm and some screening to help with that.
It's also the only road to access the park beyond, correct?
Correct.
Yep. Kids on bikes, adults on bikes, people walking, tripling the traffic, if not more. And I don't mean any, I hope I'm not coming off as a fan, I'm just really struggling to see this. So I'd love to hear some better pros for this, because I'm sorry, it just feels like we're getting taken advantage of on this one.
If I may, I mean, you know, I mean, I get it. I mean, it's, you know, Sean and I have been discussing this, I mean, and your board's got to feel comfortable with it, no different than our council. You know, if the feasibility doesn't work out with the volumes and stuff, then, I mean, it really stops there. You know, as far as traffic, and yes, there'd be an increase in traffic. I do know when we did that joint project with Alloway and we rebuilt LeBrun there, we built it to, it was Craig Barrett at the time, we actually built that to accommodate, you know, trucks and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, the pavement shouldn't be really an issue, but that would be something in the future. I mean, that would be one of the, because right now it's a city street, but that would be one of the things, what I envision part of the agreement, that we would share costs of repairing that street in the future just because of the operation. So I just wanted to throw that there. But, I mean, if you as a board, if you don't feel comfortable, I get it, that just, that it tells the city, I got to look at other options. But, like, you know, stress what Sean says, you know, as in municipalities, we try to collaborate as much as we can. This is a great opportunity to collaborate on a joint operation. So,
I know when we redid LeBrun, there was talk of adding either bike lane, sidewalk, walking path, because there really isn't one now, right? I mean, it's just the road.
Which is a possibility if there's a right of way.
You got ditching on both sides.
Right. You'd have to, you'd have to fill it in, put in a storm sewer and curb. Maybe not a curb, but then a trail on top of that. Yeah.
I think it's worth taking the first step and exploring, because we're not really committing to anything. They're putting up the upfront costs, and anywhere along this path, if we feel it's not right, then we can back out. And there would be economy of scale, rather than two separate operations doing everything at once, sharing labor. But all those details of, you know, how much and where the costs are shared would be worked out later. And, you know, if that agreement can't be worked out, then we wouldn't move forward.
So the feasibility study would also take a look at the increased traffic and the ability to absorb that.
Yeah.
Scott, you said the Y. I thought you said in 2010 they have a right.
Well, they actually got a tentative agreement with the city as an option on that site. That was about 2010, I believe. That's what our city administrator said.
Okay.
So a lot of it has to do, you know, with Alfred Southern Bridge. So I mean, when that's going to go? So they really. Originally, that Southern Bridge should have been in. And when I started, it was supposed to be 2020. Well, guess what? It's 2020. It's still not
done. It's not done, is it?
Yeah, nope. But I would imagine there is the press, the county's on board. There's a lot of commitments going on. So I think that ball is rolling, and it's that Southern Bridge corridor is going to actually start to, you know, come to light. So, you know, I would envision that the Y in the near future could potentially want to acquire that site and start doing the things they need to do to develop it. Mm-hmm. And what I don't want is, you know, have the city ministers say, well, by 6 months we need to be off. Now I'm trying to be, if we look at things timed right, I mean, and everybody's comfortable, we keep moving forward, you know, we probably design and bid it for construction and next year, and then, you know, by 2022 we're off our site and we're getting into the site of, you know, the combined site. So it gives us a couple of years, but before you know it, snap of your finger, time's gone. So,
yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, I really appreciate you know, the work that Sean and I done to this, and the board just considering it. So,
well, yeah, I'm okay with step one.
Okay.
doesn't come out of our pockets, right?
No.
But it tells us, does it make sense, does it not make sense, at least at the beginning.
Yeah. Could we factor in a potential cost of sewer and bike path, walking path, get the walkers, pedestrians off the road?
Definitely.
I mean, that might be a something we need to include.
And we can negotiate, right?
Well, I know we looked at it when we negotiated with Alloway to build that, and there's issues there. Because we talked, if you recall, we were looking at having a joint project from where the run ends, I forget what street cuts through on Alloway, and to get that to tie in and it continue. Because, I mean, that trail is heavily used. So I know that at the time, that section was run by the compost site, was pretty beat up, and at the time with Craig, we were going, you know, we need to at least get this fixed. And I know we evaluated what the width and what to do with the issue is. I mean, you don't have the width and the fact that, like Sean said, if you want sidewalk, well, now you're putting, you know, sidewalk curb in. Well, then you have the terrain on the south side of the road that's high. Well, you can't really, you know, build to the north side because it's low and wet on the Alloway side. So it was kind of a challenge engineering-wise to try to get a sidewalk in there. So the talk was, you know, we paved as wide as we could so at least people have the area to walk down. I believe it's a little bit wider than what it used to be, but I know there's challenges to just to go any wider than there is now.
I think we can we could take a look at it, and we don't need Robert E. Lee to evaluate that, but we could take a look at it quickly and look to see if it can be built, curb and gutter, little boulevard, sidewalk, or trail. See if we can blend back into the existing topography without a lot of impacts, and we can determine if it makes sense to be on the north or on the south side. So,
there'd be grants available to, like, park related grants to provide access, to safe access.
I would DNR. There are DNR grants.
There are, but it's would probably rate very very low because it's a small section. Mm-hmm. And where's it tying into? There's no sidewalks on East River Drive.
We're going to be, with the exception, we're going to, yeah.
Future, yes.
Yeah, we're going to be building a sidewalk in 2022 along East River Drive under the facility state route to school program. So then you would have connectivity. Does a trail come? I show the trail right here, but.
Yeah.
Does it end right there?
It ends in the parking lot, but it still loops around and it goes through to Pier and the ledge view.
So, yeah, I mean, it would be a connector, I guess, and a sidewalk to the trail.
Yep. I'd like to make a motion that we recommend the village board supports the step one for feasibility study paid for by De Pere to look into the improvements on the LeBron Yard Waste site.
I would second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
At this point. For me. Sorry.
Don't be sorry.
I'm not optimistic. But we'll get more information.
Thanks for your consideration. So it's all about. So
thanks for coming over.
Thanks,
Scott.
Thanks a lot.
We need our board meetings to be like this. No camera, I mean, all the table.
I don't know.
The
Empire Prepare Project
did
result.
Thanks, Scott.
You guys have a good one.
You too.
We'll be in touch, Sean.
Sounds good.
Yep.
So we just recently advertised and opened bids for the Empire Prepare Project. That project includes touch-up painting on the inside and on the outside of the tank.
Sandpipes the water tower, right?
Yes, water tower off the Webster
Avenue.
You're
talking to lay people.
water tower off the Webster Avenue.
The golf tee.
Oh, it's the big golf tee. That's great.
The project also includes removal and replacement of the overflow weir inside of the tank. In 2015, we had some ice damage, and that shoved that up and for the most part, remove that from the inside of the tank. It's just hanging inside of the tank. So that will get removed, replaced. The painter's ring was damaged when that happened as well, and that will get removed in its entirety, and we'll use a different system for you know, call it for fall protection for one to go in for maintenance. We're gonna
on the outside or on the inside?
It's going to be on the roof of the tank. There are couplings that will be drilled in. They're openings, and you can drop a line down through that opening, and at the end of your line, you'd have a steel plug or whatever, and that would support somebody inside. When it's not being used, there's plugs, and you just seal them up. There'd be that's the inside of the tank. On the outside, I'd mentioned we're going to do some spot touch-up painting. We're going to exterior power wash the outside. And on the outside, the overflow pipe comes down the tank, and it discharges into a catch basin that doesn't meet the NR code. There needs to be a proper air gap in there, so we'll cut that, provide that. So in general, those are the improvements that were bid. We had opened bids last week, Tuesday. We had 9 people submit bids. The apparent low bidder is Water Tower Clean and Coat at a bid of $80,100. We had put together an engineering estimate, and we had estimated $120,000 for the repair. We got some really good numbers.
Yeah, including 409.
We got a high number, too. We got a high number.
We're going to make some money on this one.
$50 an hour.
Wow. That's great.
So Strand
estimate.
Strand Associates wrote the specification?
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Well, did you review the specification?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. They put together the plans and the specs for this.
Have we used Water Tower Clean and Coat for anything in the past?
We have. Last year, we had 4 water reservoirs that needed to be inspected. We had joint bid that work with the pier, and they were the low bidder. They did a decent job. We're also working with them right now on another item, another water-related item. We have not yet gotten their bidder qualifications, but we'll look through. The consultant, Strand Associates, has also worked with them on other projects. Mm. So we'll be looking through their work experience and their financials. If everything looks okay, then I would I'd make a recommendation at the village board meeting to accept the low bidder and to move ahead with the project.
Yes. You know, with all that money you're saving, you could paint the name Alloway on the water tower.
100 grand.
Pardon?
About 100 grand, isn't it?
It's not cheap.
To repaint the whole thing.
Well, I think the really high bid that we had gotten, I think there was they were a little confused by possibly by the spec. I think the number that they provided was to repaint the entire inside of the tank. No, it's not a to go to a full paint. It's not cheap at all.
And so we couldn't just, if we wanted to have another project, we couldn't just paint Alloway on it, the name, and leave the current paint there?
Oh, we could. I'm sure we could. Okay. We're going to, you know, with this maintenance activity, we're somewhat planning a full paint in 2030. That would be painting in its entirety, the inside and exterior of the tank.
Okay.
And just off the top of my head, Strand had provided me a number for that. I want to say it's somewhere between, I think it's close to $750,000.
Is that with escalation?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
We're going to have a painting party.
Yeah. I got a couple cans of Rust-Oleum at home.
The fire department over there.
I used to do it all the time as a kid.
See, I don't know how they got it wrong. There's square feet in here, and they're saying $250 a square foot.
Yeah, that's good money.
Right.
I think they don't want it. I don't know why they would even.
So I think that's what it is.
Well, then they wouldn't have bid at all if they didn't want it.
Throw it out there.
Do we have a motion?
So what kind of motion are you looking for?
I would need a motion to award the project to the apparent low bidder.
To recommend to the board that they award.
With the contingency of the approval of the bidder's qualification.
Okay.
I'm making the assumption, like anything else, there's quality clauses in the contract and everything else, that if it isn't done to our specifications.
We're going to be out there inspecting the work of, in our contract with Strand. Strand will be there when they need to be there to look at the pay. And, so the inspector that will be there has 10 to 15 years of experience, and they do a lot of these types of projects. So.
To his point, though, if they don't live up to their bargain, we have recourse.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's contingent upon what?
Approval of the bidder's qualifications.
When will we have those?
Per the...
Should I have them today? I don't have them.
We should be well ahead of the board meeting.
Yeah. Okay. I will make a motion to... Do you have enough more questions?
One more quick question, sir. I'm assuming there's also no difference in terms of warranty of this work amongst the different companies or duration or anything like that? Sorry.
Generally speaking, I'm not an expert in this area, but on a road project, typically the contract requires the contract warranty as workmanship for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
On this type of project, I would think at a minimum 1 year, but paint might be a little bit different.
I think there might be a longer one on the materials from the manufacturer, depending on what manufacturer it is.
I can get back to you on that.
Yeah, I guess my point is, if Moen says, yeah, this is our price, we're $17,100 more expensive, but we give an extra 3 years of coverage.
They all bid on the same contract, on the same plan, on
the
same spec.
Warranty.
Yes.
Same warranty.
Yes.
Same support. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Was the product specified,
yes,
or was it several products? I mean, usually if they have several products, they're all comparable.
But the paint spec was provided. Question?
No, sir.
Very good question. I will make a motion to recommend to the board that you award the contract to Water Tower Clean and Coat for $80,100, contingent on the approval of the bidder's qualifications.
Second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Item number 6, sewer backup insurance.
All right. This will be fun doing little minutes and this at the same time. I've got a packet here.
Right, for minutes for this.
It is recorded. Any motions?
Okay.
Kurt, Sean, I think that's extra. You're going to see this. You've seen this. Well, John, I would kind of lead this discussion. The League of Municipalities, who we do our property insurance under, who we do our property insurance under, does offer a sewer backup policy. The way the policy is developed, it's based on your population. $1.75 per person in the village, so it's about $24,000 that this coverage could take place. Bellevue is looking at it right now. Her insurance carrier, her representative from the league, she indicated about half of her clients that she services do provide this to the residents. Typically, it shows up on your utility bill.
So it would be $1.75 per
person, but if you do that times the 13,800, comes to around $24,000, give or take. So that would be the yearly premium that the village would pay for this coverage. Now, there's goods, there's bads with this. This question was laid out on the Wisconsin Municipal and County website, just asking the general question from people throughout the state, do you do this, and how does it work? Bellevue put that out there, and there was only a few respondents that came back One respondent was, you know, it should be up to the resident to provide those type of services for themselves, i.e. buy flood insurance, or two, get a rider on your homeowner's policy for a sewer backup. I do that. I have that on my own. There's a $100,000 aggregate per occurrence.
Which means what?
Means it tops out at, if there's $100,000 worth of claims, that's it.
For the whole village.
For the whole village.
For $100,000?
Yep. Per occurrence, right.
Per occurrence.
But that's not a whole lot.
That's nothing.
Could get a whole, all the red on it.
Well,
yellow. Yeah.
The idea was to, you know, right now this week was flood awareness. Mm-hmm. The governor's put that out. We've been working with all the municipalities around here. Jim's involved, Sean's involved, I'm involved, Debbie. A lot of us are involved with this emergency management to try to educate residents that it's coming. You know, chances of a flood this year are very, very high. Most likely will occur, so be prepared. And number one is buy flood insurance. Anyone can buy flood insurance. We are part of a CRS, community rating system, which those that fall within the floodplain get a 10%, I believe it's 10% discount on their flood insurance. I don't know what the numbers are of how many people actually take advantage of that, but it's there. Lynn can buy it on her property up towards the hill. I can, up on the hill. The sewer backup rider that you can get on your homeowner's insurance, I looked mine up to verify. It's $25,000.
Max.
So in the event, the village did have this sewer backup coverage, and I have my rider, it's to my homeowners first, and this would be secondary insurance.
Assuming nobody else has the backup. From that
right.
Same storm.
Same storm.
That same issue.
We have from LeBrun to St. Joseph, just using East River Drive in any street that comes off to the east, there's roughly 265 homes along there. If each one of them were to have a claim, it's not a lot of money. It's like $300-some or whatever it comes out to that they would actually be covering. So,
what is a typical flood insurance, or is it hard to come up with a typical? Let's say there's 265 homes. For any of them to purchase a flood insurance, how much is that?
I want to say flood insurance is, could be about $1,000 a year.
And the backup?
I'm just guessing.
I don't know. Backup is, I have backup.
100 and something?
132.
132.
Okay, 132 per year. Or sump pump failure.
Yep. Out of those 265 give or take homes along East River Drive, 66 of them have gone through the process to get their home out of the floodplain, which is called the LOMAR or LOMA. So it's a recertification that states that they are out of the floodplain. I mean, their homes all around them are still in it, so, you know, chances of it happening to them as well as the neighbors are pretty, pretty high.
So are there events that have occurred recently in past years that, if we'd have this insurance, would have helped? And if so, like, what kind of quantity of homes are affected or per event? I'm sure it varies quite a bit.
And I was going to mention that to everybody. When does a sewer backup occur? It occurs when there's a pipe blockage, grease, hair, somebody shoves down what they shouldn't shove down the toilet.
Disposable diaper.
Disposable diaper gets in the sewer and it gets plugged,
and as a result, it backs up into somebody's basement. Mm-hmm. So a pipe blockage, excessive root growth can cause a backup.
Is that usually in laterals, though, and not in mains?
It could be in a main.
It could be in a main, but if it were to happen in a lateral, it's mm-hmm. the homeowner's responsibility. Mm-hmm. Okay. Pipe failure. Pipe collapses and mm-hmm. causes a backup. Clear water or INI. Good example of that was spring of 2019 when we had the flood. Our system was flooded with clear water, and INI and that clear water overwhelmed our system, and we had some backups. Spring of last year, we had maybe six people.
Roughly six.
Six reported backups as a result of
and
the
one
flood.
Event.
That one event. Yeah. There were other homes that were flooded, but some of those were a result of overland flow getting through a window and down into a basement. There may have been a handful a result of a failed sump pump. Sump pump couldn't keep up with the groundwater, and as a result, the basement flooded. But those are the reasons why a sewer would back up. But what do we do to prevent it? On a yearly basis, we go out and maintain our sanitary sewer system to prevent blockage. We're mandated by the DNR to clean 1/3 of our sanitary sewer a year. We also have areas within the village that we call. Problem areas? What do we call them?
Six-month maintenance. Yep. We need attention every 6 months. There's a, I would say maybe a dozen. I would say roughly a dozen. Yes, there's 12.
Sewers that we routinely clean.
12 sewers that we, yep, routinely clean.
So we go and clean our sewers. We're proactive on an every other year basis under the reconstruction project. We remove and replace deteriorated and failing sanitary sewer. So those are the steps that we take to prevent that. A resident can take precautionary measures as well. They need to maintain their own lateral on a yearly basis, but from time to time they should hire somebody to clean their lateral. What they can also do, and what Brad has put on our website and emailed out to those that are on our email list, they can install a backflow preventer to prevent when a sanitary sewer backs up, the backflow preventer will close shut and prevent that water from going up into their basement.
Is that put in the basement or up?
It's put in the basement.
Within the basement floor.
Yeah. Between the clean out and the basement wall. What does that cost? Anywhere from $7,500
to
$1,500.
$750 to $1,500.
$750 to $1,500, yeah.
Yeah, it's. I wanted to bring it forward because it is. It's fitting. It's very topical right now. And.
What was the cost again? $1.75
A $1.75 per population.
Per population.
Yep. So that's where you get into, you know.
So it would come down to on 5,000 rooftops, it's about $4.80 a year per rooftop.
Yeah.
So it's not a lot of money, but if
not a lot of insurance either.
Right.
Well,
if every one of those 265 houses made a claim, they'd be able to get $377.
It may not even cover their cleaning expense, but it would help.
Yeah.
It does help.
Well, the question I had, though, is in events in the past where something, an event has happened, how many residents were affected per event? And, you know, you probably don't have an average or anything, but if we say, okay, this one was big and bad, and that was 20 houses or 6 houses, I mean, in that situation, that would help them. And do these costs fall on us if it's the main that backs them up? Then do we have to pay for that expense?
We're immune from it right now. Yeah.
This is all sewer, so this is black as well as gray water or stormwater?
Should cover both.
any of this cost passed on to the in other cities? Or they
most of them put it on the utility. It's a tough one because you know you don't know.
I would guess the majority would, especially if you live up higher. It's like, right. Well, the guy need it. You know?
Right.
Yeah. You may not ever need it.
Yeah.
I got it. I live as high as you can get in your eBay.
Really?
I took $13,000 worth of damage 2 years ago, or a year and a half.
That was because of a failed sump pump?
That was because we had a 500-year blast. You remember we discussed that? We hit torrential rain. And we had an electrical outage also in my sump pump. They well, obviously didn't work. And it filled.
Did you do the battery backup now? I mean, that's gotten to be pretty popular.
No,
that's
kind of
pricey.
I'm sorry, would this cover that? This wouldn't cover that, because that's still your property owner's responsibility. This is for...
My private covered it.
Yeah, this wouldn't have covered that.
I don't know that it would.
According to this, it's water line, property owner's responsibility. It's not until you hit the main sewer line.
I think my understanding, Brad, is if it flows from our pipe into your home, it's covered.
Right.
Yeah.
So right. That may not have been
but
covered.
But if the pump is failing to send it out of my pipe into your pipe,
then it may not have been covered. It may not be covered. It
wouldn't be covered.
Well, that was one of the questions you asked, sump pump failure. If water were to back up from within the municipality owned sewer main, John's question was sump pump failure. The response was, if water were to back up from within the municipality owned sewer main, then this coverage would apply even if the building's sump pump could not keep up with the amount of water
right.
coming in. Or if the sump pump failed at some point.
But your instance isn't the city's stormwater or sewer backing into your house. It was your house not being able to handle all that rain at once.
I guess we don't know where the water came from.
Think, well, the storm sewer was inundated. It was full of water. So it was actually backing up.
Oh, it was?
I would, yes. My experience, it would be
there's some gray area there, mm-hmm. whether or not it
wasn't covered. Flooding in the window wells. And
If I may, you know, the information, I wish I would have got it to you earlier. I apologize for not doing that. But if you would like to read through it, and we can revisit this in the first meeting in March. Mm-hmm. And I'd ask one of the questions that I asked the League of Municipalities, if the village were to decide to move forward with it, is there a 30-day waiting period? And they said absolutely not. As soon as we fill out the application, which is pretty minimal, the residents would be covered. The second portion to that is, how are we paying for it? You know, there's enough on our utility bill to add another... $4 for a year, it's still $4. You know, is it something that one of the respondents to this question that Diane put out from Bellevue, I want to say it was Cronewater or something like that, used to provide it, quit doing it, this year they're going to do it again. Now, again, I don't know how they were paying for that. Is it the village of Cronewater themselves paying for it, or is it put on individual utility bills? Will everyone take advantage of it if we offered it? You never know.
Well, they don't have a choice if we offer it.
Yeah. No, have the same equal opportunity to be submitting a claim? No.
Oh.
Because based on where you live, right? You're up in the hill versus down by the river, you're more likely to have this occur. So yeah. That's one of those. Are you treating people fairly? That's, I guess, my question.
We've talked about the lift station issue, and if one of those failed,
it could mean a lot for
a
lot of people.
What would that mean? We'd have to get a pump there right away and bypass to the next downstream manhole.
Yeah.
And we'd have to continue to do that until the pump was repaired or replaced.
But is there a risk of homes backing up in the sanitary sewer as a result of that incident?
There is a, there would be. I guess it depends on what kind of flood, what kind of rainfall event we had. But if we would hopefully we would find out right away through our SCADA system. We could get over there. We do have a pump. We have a large enough pump. We would put a pump in, and we bypass down to the next downstream manhole to try to keep up.
Okay.
Did you mention what the...
We are. We can talk about it.
What the cap would be at that price?
I'm looking at
the 100? Yeah.
Be for a single occurrence, but it says annual, you can match that only at 300.
Correct.
So three events, basically.
Three events.
And that, so the $1.75 a person is for the 100,000 single, 300,000 annual?
Yeah.
So you could make 12 times your money.
Not that you want to. But
oh, so it's not 100,000 per year, it's 100,000
per occurrence. Up to 300.
With a max of three occurrences.
Yeah.
So any idea how many occurrences we have usually?
Last year more than this than yes. Previous years.
So more than over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Do we have a village that we can contact that's been on this? Or use this?
Yeah, I can do a little more research and bring it back. That's why I wanted to get the information out to you to start to think about it. Okay. And we can always discuss it again that first meeting in March.
Sure. Bring it back to the Public Works Committee.
Yeah.
The Village Board.
Public Works.
This is the Lee Municipality Customer
cool.
Service.
All right.
Thanks for all that information.
Makes sense.
Line.
Perfect.
Item number 7, emergency management preparation for flooding.
Do you want to start that or do you? I can tell you what we've been doing in Public Works Department. Jim has just recently, a couple weeks ago, he went and got 4 pallets of sandbags, 200 sandbags. We have also purchased a trailer that we're going to retrofit that we're going to have ready to go. And we'll, on that trailer will be barrels, cones, barricades,
four pumps.
We're going to have some sandbags on there. What else am I going to know? Is that pretty much everything?
Probably some visqueen for the lift stations, and we'll be pretty much ready to go for whatever.
We had, and we talked about it at the village board meeting. We are currently getting quotes from contractors to install a valve on the Green Isle Park sanitary lateral.
Could you explain what a lift station does?
Yeah.
Well, that's what you're talking about, right?
Well, the lateral.
The lateral.
Plug.
The park.
Oh, okay.
The
that's
plug.
Give or take, right?
It's somewhere between $7,500 and $9,000 or $10,000 to install a valve. The reason for that, Green Isle Park is prone to flooding. We have bathroom facilities. We have manholes that may not be watertight. When that floods, that water gets into our sanitary sewer system. They have a lateral that drains into our sanitary sewer underneath East River Drive. What we're doing is we're proposing to install a valve just upstream of that connection, so that when there's a threat of a flood, we can go over and close that and prevent that clear water from getting into our system and overwhelming our sanitary sewer. We're also looking into the possibility of maybe adjusting our lift station equipment, the cabinets, the manway, the access down into the lift station, working with McMahon to come up with an estimate of what it may cost to raise that equipment to a certain elevation, and they would provide us a recommendation. And it may be limited based on the equipment that we have. During last year's flood, the water got within 7 inches of the control cabinet of the lift station. It was feet away from flowing into the manway down into the lift station. At the bottom of that lift station are pumps.
Wow.
And we frequently go in those lift stations to inspect and maintain. I haven't gotten a number yet for that, but when I do, I'll share that with everybody. Those are the things, steps that we've been taking, Brad, and Debbie and Julie have been attending the Brown County Emergency Management meetings, and you guys have been putting out a lot of information on our website and mm-hmm. and our web through email. We've been meeting on a regular basis to get ready.
We're trying to make sure that we're ready to go. The website that Brown County put together, I think, is floodingbc.com or .org. It's been sent out in several emails and been posted. The Code Red, certainly encourage people to sign up for the Code Red, which is an alert system. That's Debbie keeps putting that out on our website and stuff. We meet again next Tuesday, the 17th, whatever the 17th is, to continue the discussions. And the 17th is more of the action plan. We've got an emergency operation plan, procedures that we all need to be very versed on, from the public works standpoint to parks, sheriff, to our fire department, Debbie, Julie, myself, village board, need to understand what that means, what your roles and responsibilities are. Luckily, thankfully, you know, we do contract with, or we merge with Green Bay Metro. That's their expertise, is to deal with emergencies. So it's nice to be able to kind of hand a lot of that off onto them in the event there is an emergency. But Jim needs to know who he's contacting. This whole mapping, or the website, is going to include maps that will, up to minute for the most part, what roads are closed, the recommendations for residents. You know, if you're asked to evacuate, heed to that warning. You may want to get out, or you should get out. Make sure that each one of us, including every resident, has a plan. What is your route? Where are you going to go? Make sure you have various materials with you, ready to go in the event, so you're up and gone. Plans for your pets. Have all that stuff kind of laid out. Again, and the responsibility falls upon all of us. As a municipality, obviously, we have a lot of responsibility, but each and every resident has a great deal of responsibility themselves. So that's kind of where we're at. We just wanted to make sure that you're aware of it, keep it in the forefront, because it's not just flooding, it's all emergencies.
Cool.
So there's no action, just the discussion.
Right.
Engineering technician position.
So at the last village board meeting, we had brought to the village board the engineering tech job description. We had reviewed that. Due to technicality, I guess.
An oversight.
An oversight on our part with the description of the item on the agenda. We're going to bring the item back to the village board for approval of the engineering technician position to place an ad and to begin advertising for the position.
And to fill.
Okay.
Yeah, that was it was one of those that, you know, you anticipate that based on what it says, but it's clearly was not. You approved the job description.
Yeah.
And didn't get the authority to move forward with it, so.
In your sense, is finding someone should be
timing,
fairly easy?
Timing is not too bad when you've got individuals graduating in the spring. Mm-hmm. So
there's a supply of this type out there.
We're hopeful.
Yeah, I have no clue.
And we're open to part-time or full-time, a minimum of 30 hours. we're hoping with that flexibility that we could possibly find a stay-at-home mom or dad that would like to work from 9 until 2:30.
Banks hiring at all?
Back in the day. Well, there are a lot of people embracing non-traditional work schedules nowadays, which is really good to see.
Yeah, could be a win-win.
I'm just curious, the third line from the bottom on the first page says maintains and updates the AutoCAD Civil 3D software. Is that actually the software? They'd update the software, not the files, right?
More so the settings and the files. On a yearly basis, we have to renew that contract,
mm-hmm.
and with that, they come out with
new
updates to the not necessarily new version, but updates to their software.
So it is the software.
Yeah. Okay. That was just a discussion item.
Stormwater ERU charges.
I've just recently had asked McMahon to put together a proposal to evaluate stormwater charges, ERU charges for non-residential properties. Those would be your multi-family apartments, commercial properties, institutional.
What does ERU stand for?
Equivalent runoff unit. And that represents 3,663 square feet of imperviousness. And that is based on the average imperviousness of a residential property. So when the stormwater utility was established, the consultant at the time, I believe it was McMahon, they took a sample of all the residential properties in the village to determine one equivalent runoff unit, and that's based on a single-family residential property. They took a sample of, I don't know how many single-family residential properties, but from that, they came up with the average imperviousness for one single-family property, and that's rooftop, sidewalk, not within the rural right-of-way, but service walk, driveways, patios.
Okay.
And don't quote me on that square footage, but I'm pretty sure 3663. Pretty sure that's the number. So from that establishes a one equivalent runoff unit that's charged for every single family home in Holloway. For non-residential properties, there's more imperviousness. So to come up with the equivalent runoff unit for a non-residential property, you actually have to measure the area of the imperviousness and by that number to come up with ERUs. And then there's a charge per ERU. And it's $7.50 per ERU.
Okay.
So, on a monthly basis, every single family residential home gets charged $7.50. Your commercial, your non-residential properties are charged more. What happens over the years is there's development over the years, and it may be less than what we would permit under our stormwater ordinance. It'd be less than a half acre. We want to go out there and take a look at all of our non-residential properties and come up with those new areas, and just make sure that we're capturing all the revenue that we can from those properties. And there may have been some properties that were developed or redeveloped that may have slipped through the cracks, and we'll catch those.
Okay.
Is that what this last
page,
with the red, is very telling, because there's a lot more impermeable surface on there than was outlined.
So, I don't know the last time that we've gone through this. I think it was a while ago. I don't even want to guess when we had last done an analysis of this time, but you can see that there's some properties that we're not currently showing any physical measurement for.
Mm-hmm.
We may have an equivalent runoff unit charge to that property, and then that would have been documented during the permitting of that development or redevelopment.
Do you know how often GIS aerials are done? Is it like every 3 or 4 or 5 years?
So we have,
just got the new ones, right?
Yeah, there will be a new aerial that will be taken by Brown County this spring. Mm-hmm. However, that won't be available until the end of this year. So I really don't want to wait. I want to get started now. We'll use it 2017. And we can, if there's some questionable areas, when we have the new aerial, we can go and check those areas. But
good stuff.
Yeah. And Sean, this all goes into our stormwater
utility
fund that is used to continuously build detention ponds,
right,
maintain the detention ponds, so we're all benefiting from it.
And currently $750 per household utility bill?
Single family, yeah.
Per month, yes. Okay. So we got some here, looks like condo developments and things like that, and Langley Court, I think, and some of these others, Alloway Court. So those properties will be reassessed in a sense? Or
validated. Is he looking at validation as a lot of these?
For the non-residential, I had questioned why this was in there.
Yeah, because these are residential.
Right.
They're not freestanding.
I think this is an answer to my question. It was potential condominiums. This could be an example would be a whole river condominium mm-hmm. complex. This is planned development. This won't be included in the analysis. So.
Right, just some new ones.
And I can, I just want to make sure that I'm giving you guys the right numbers. But, the ERU charge, I'm fairly sure that's $1.75, but $7.50, sorry. I'll verify that.
I wasn't confused, not.
Now you are. $7.50 per ERU.
All right.
I'll verify that in the morning.
Good stuff.
All right, do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Give the name of the minute.
All those in favor?
Aye.
We stand adjourned.
Thank you very much.
All right, good. Yeah, just get choked up at the end of the meeting.
I do. Yeah. So whenever somebody calls.